You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to In Search Of. We're your host, Ashton
and Sam.
We're two accountants who binge podcasts by day and TV by night. Keep listening to find what you've been in search of. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Ashton.
All right. Today we have international murders. So we're going to talk. Our show is Don't F With Cats. That's on Netflix. And then we have two Crime Junkie episodes. Mine is Setagaya Family Murders, and yours is
Dellen Millard.
Millard, yes. Also, one of my friends was telling me, and I thought that this might be a good idea, we could do like where we say the episodes that we're going to talk about like before we release it. So it like gives people a chance to listen, and then they can come back and listen. And so then it's like they're kind of in the conversation with us.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So like on Fridays, maybe we can say over the weekend, here's your homework.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe we'll start doing that. And so then it can be more of a group thing. But, so those are our three topics or shows that we're going to talk about today. So if you don't want any spoilers, here's your cutoff. But yeah, let them know that we sent you. And we'll start with Don't F With Cats. So that was released, I think, in 2019, I think is what it said. It wasn't that long ago. And it's only like a couple of episodes. But we were actually just reading about it because we couldn't remember.
It's been a while since we've watched all the details.
But basically what happens is there's this guy who, it's horrible to even like say this as we have two cats sitting on sitting right next to us, but this guy is like filming himself like killing and torturing cats online, and there's these two people. They find, like, they come across these videos and they're like, we need to find who this guy is because, like, this is not okay. And I was going to try to find their names. Body Movan, that's not her real name. That's just like her alias that she goes by online. And then John Green. And so they start this like Facebook group called the Find the Kitten Vacuumer for Great Justice. And he does like there's a couple of videos where he does some bad, like really horrible things to cats. And I don't even want to like go over them because it's just bad. If you want the details, you can watch the show. But it is one of those things where you're watching it and you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, you start to feel like sick.
Yeah.
And but I don't you even can't, like... I know.
As you sit here with my cats all in your face.
The one jumped on my lap and I was like, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, Walter loves everybody. So if you come to my house, you're going to get greeted with a large black and white cat. But anyways, so they start this Facebook group to track him down. He does like a couple of these videos, and they track him in Canada, and they warn the Canadian police, and they're like, you know, he's gonna start like killing people, like if you don't do something about this. And they like don't take them seriously. And when then he kills a Chinese student, I guess, which did he film that one? I can't remember if he filmed that. I think he had something online.
Yeah, something. I mean, somehow they knew.
Yeah.
So there was,
they were able to track what he was. I think he liked the like cat and mouse game of like mm-hmm. people tracking him. And
yeah,
like,
he was, I mean, bragging about it, because why would you put it online?
Yeah. Yeah. So he like, it's horrible, but he like rapes and murders this guy, I think like dismembers his body, and they eventually catch him. But yeah, I mean, it's basically, they're just, they tell you like the horrible thing he's doing online, and they just, then they tell the story of them trying to track them and the police not taking them seriously, and then they eventually catch him. His name was like Luca
Minotti.
Yeah, he was something. I think from Montreal, I think.
Yeah, but it's so impressive that like a group of just random people that I think they were on a Facebook group together.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, and that's how they did it. And they listened, because like this initial video had like music in the background or something. Mm-hmm. And they found out the language of the music, but that was like a red herring, because it was not English. And so,
And they even looked at like the outlets in the videos to track
people
down.
Were like, I'm in Europe, and our outlets
look like this,
look like that. Or, and then there was like a blanket on a bed, mm-hmm. and they found out like where the blanket was made, and there was a vacuum, or the type of vacuum mm-hmm. that he used. And the woman body, I think she found where the vacuum was like manufactured, and she like went in person and like figured out where it was sold and all that.
Uh-huh. They did a great job.
And they finally found where he lived, because there was a picture. They found a picture of him online. He was like standing on a balcony of mm-hmm. like an apartment.
And they
and
like
in the background
looked in.
There was like a gas station. And so the guy like zoomed in on the gas station and then used Google Maps for like where
it's
that
crazy.
Gas station was. And there was like a corner, and he was like, that's it.
Yeah, it's wild. I saw like a tweet, and it said, if I appear to be missing, please contact Body Movin' and John Green rather than the police.
Yeah, really. They'll figure it out.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, warning, it's hard to watch, but it is amazing to see these people, like a community, come together and track this like international, like there, she was from Las Vegas and he was from, I don't know where he's from, but I mean, they were just like two normal people here in America that like figured it out.
Yeah.
So it was pretty impressive. But anyways, so that's Don't F with Cats on Netflix. So now we'll move on to our two Crime Junkie episodes. I can go first, I guess. I don't know.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. But this is the Setagaya family murders. So this is a Crime Junkie episode. They don't number them, but if you like search by that name, you will find it. It was released in May of 2021. And this happened in Tokyo, so I'm going to try my best to like pronounce some of these words, so bear with me. But this crime happened on New Year's Eve in 2000 in Setagaya, Tokyo. A mom, Hiroko, I believe is how you say it, she was trying to get in touch with her daughter and could not get in touch with her or anyone in the family. So her daughter, Yasuko, is married to Mikio, and they have two children, Nina and Ray, 8 and 6 years old, and they lived like really close to each other. So since she couldn't get a hold of anyone, she was like, I'm just gonna go over there. So she goes over there, knocks on the door, no one answers, and at this point she's like, okay, this is just really weird. So she uses her spare key to get into the front door, and when she enters the home, she first sees her son-in-law laying on the floor covered in blood, and he had been stabbed. And on Crime Junkies, Ashley and Brittany talk about like how brave the mom is to like continue to go searching throughout the house, because at that point you don't know like if the killer is still in the house mm-hmm. or what's going on. But, you know, her motherly instincts probably just like kicked in and she was like, I gotta find like where everybody else is. So she goes upstairs and she finds her daughter and granddaughter upstairs, and they had been stabbed as well. And there's like blood everywhere. She tries to revive them, but they are like cold to the touch and dead. And her grandson is still in bed. And he was not bloody, but he was cold to the touch. So she calls the police, and when they arrive, they notice like the scene is really odd. The house is a mess. Like papers are scattered everywhere. Drawers are pulled out. Had they been dumped and like stacked on top of each other, and like papers are tossed everywhere, and like they find papers like in the bathtub. Just a very odd scene. They find blood on a towel and a sanitary wipe, and they think the killer used this to clean their own blood. And they mention that this is common, like with stabbing attacks, because a lot of times, like blood, like gets everywhere, and then that knife will slip out of the attacker's hand, and then they'll like injure themselves. So they realize that the killer has left the murder weapons at the scene. They brought their own knife, and they used some from the family's home, because I think the knife that they brought, like, is just a horrible thing that happened, but it like broke off in the dad's head. So he resorted to using one of their knives in the kitchen to like, I guess, finish the job. So they, you know, they analyze the scene, they find like papers everywhere, they find the murder weapon. And then they also like start to see other clues. They said the killer ate food from the house. Like there was like ice cream wrappers where he had like eaten some ice cream. Just had a snack, I guess.
Take a break.
Yeah. He left clothes at the house. He left a bag with, they find sand in it, which is like kind of an important note that I'll bring up later. There was some cash stolen, but other things were left of value, like bank cards and stuff, so they were a little confused by that. But they could tell, like, it looked like the killer was looking for something because of the way the scene was just a mess and things were thrown everywhere. This is also a very interesting point. He left unflushed poop in the toilet, and they know it was him, I guess, because they had to take it in and test it. So it wasn't.
Well, he had a snack.
He had to go to the bathroom. Yeah. So he didn't even have the courtesy to flush it, but okay. He left fingerprints and blood like all over the house. So you would think this would be like easy peasy with all the evidence and everything left. You think they would be able to find this guy pretty quick. Well, the DNA doesn't match anyone on file. And a thing that they noted in the episode is that in Japan, they can get people's DNA even if you're suspected of a crime. So the DNA pool is a lot bigger, and they still didn't have like a match. So they were like, okay, this person's either never been caught or this was his first attack. They also note that, or like, they were able to tell that he stayed around for a long time after the murder. I mean, obviously he had time to have some snacks and go poop, so he hung out for a while, so clearly he like wasn't nervous about getting caught. They said someone was online on the computer at like around 1 a.m and they believe this was after the family had been murdered, which they believe was around 11:30. So it just kind of shows you the timeline of like how long he was there. And then there was more activity on that computer around 10 a.m., which is when the mom entered the home. But they think he was already gone by that point, and that maybe when she came in, she like knocked the mouse over and like, you know, made like something opened up or whatever. They were able to tell that the killer came in and out through the window in the bathroom where he had done his business. So a couple days after the crime, the police got the autopsy back, and they were able to tell that Ray had died by suffocation. He had been strangled by hand, and they believe he was killed first, and then everyone else died from blood loss from multiple puncture wounds. So they think the dad was attacked next, and then the mom, Nina, and her mom were the last two victims, and they said that they actually had some postmortem wounds, so like they were already dead and he was continuing to attack them. And so Brittany and Ashley make the point of overkill, because they're like, it's just so much, there's just so much blood, there's so many stab wounds, like there's just,
it's usually like personal when yeah. they like go that far.
Yeah. And so they did make the point of like, okay, if it's not personal, maybe it was, he didn't know what he was doing. So like if this was his first act, you know, maybe he didn't know what he was doing, and so he didn't know when to stop, which I thought was a good point.
Like, I don't know if this killed him. Let me make sure.
Yeah. And they left so much evidence behind too, that they were like, okay, maybe he's
not smart.
Yeah. Inexperienced.
Doing this is not smart, obviously, yeah. But
yeah. But yeah, so much evidence left behind. He hung around, he ate, he pooped, he was surfing the web. Like, they were like, you know, another thing though, he could be relaxed. Like they said, like, okay, maybe this isn't his first time.
He's an expert.
Yeah. So he's relaxed and confident in like what he's done. Yeah. So based on the evidence that was left behind, the cops get a better picture of who the killer is. And the blood reveals it is a man, which, shocker. It's always a man. So the clothes that were left tell them it is a younger man. They trace a piece of clothing to the manufacturer, and they were able to tell like 200 and 300 of these shirts, somewhere in between there, were sold in that area. And then they were able to like figure out where the shirt was sold, like which stores, and they found it was only available in 4 stores in that area. And only 10 had been purchased. So
it's not a lot.
Exactly. So they don't really like go any further with that detail mm-hmm. other than that. But that was just like something they, you know, during their investigation, like came across. Mm-hmm. Based on the bag he had, like, I guess it was kind of like a fanny pack and was supposed to like, it looked like it would fit a man that was a slim build. So they're like, okay, maybe that's how he got in and out of the window. So the sand that they found inside the bag, they traced it, which I thought this was pretty cool that they can do this. They traced it to sand like found in the U.S. Like it was somewhere like in Nevada or California, somewhere over there. They were able to like identify the cologne that the killer, I guess, had like on his clothes. Mm. And supposedly this cologne is like very popular with skateboarders at the time. And there was actually a skate park right behind the family's house. So there had been reports that Mikio had been seen arguing with skateboarders before he died. And they don't know exactly what it could have been about, but they thought maybe the noise. So another point that they make about the skate park is that it was expanding, and the family had actually received money from the skate park because they were going to like tear down their house and like that's where they were going to expand. And it was supposedly a large sum of money, like 1 million yen, which I think is, they said, was close to like a million in US dollars. So it was a lot of money. And so they thought, okay, maybe the killer was after the money. And the family was known to keep money in the house. Like they had several 100K yen stolen from the house. So that kind of goes back to, you know, maybe the robbery is a motive, but they still aren't entirely sure. They do, with the DNA that's found, they do genetic testing, and they learn that the killer has East Asian genetic heritage on his dad's side. And then on his mother's side, they find European roots in the southern Mediterranean areas. But police are limited on what they can do with this. So they were like, okay, can they generate like a composite, like what this person looks like? But with the rules over there, they could probably, I guess, like generate it, but they couldn't post it to the public. So there's only so much they can do with that information. They mentioned that obviously this left like a lasting impact on the family. I mean, on the police who was involved at the time, and they keep in touch with the family. And one thing that I thought was cool was, I think around the 10-year anniversary of the murder, the statute of limitations of 25 years on capital murder. So there's no like statute of limitations anymore, which I was like, oh, that's,
yeah.
I don't know what it is here, but I thought that was really cool. So in 2015, a book is published by investigative journalists, and they have a conclusion. I said concussion in my notes. I was like, concussion. They have a conclusion on what happened, and they don't think it was a skater kid or like a botched robbery. They believe whoever killed them was a hired hitman and a former member of the South Korean army. They said that they like backed this up by the shoe prints left at the crime scene were made in South Korea, and this type of shoe was never sold in Japan. They also found soil particles that they could trace back to South Korea, and they believe that this killer brought a lot of evidence to distract the police, like the sand and the clothes to like, you know, because it's like, it's so much that you're like, are you stupid? Like with how much you left?
Yeah.
The author of this book alleges that someone hired an assassin to get the money from the payout they received from the skate park. And the author claims to like, he knows who it is and says he matched the fingerprints to whoever this is. But the author is also critical of the police and said like they didn't do a good job. And they said like, because it was a holiday, there was limited officers like on duty, and they just made errors early in the investigation. But the police dispute this. And so Brittany and Ashley are like, you know, everyone like kind of takes this book and its theories with a grain of salt, just because like, okay, it's 2022 and nothing's changed, right? You know,
if so you knew, you would have arrested him or
whatever. Yes, they would have somebody by now. So it's been, you know, 20 something years later, police still don't have a suspect in custody. Tokyo police have, which I thought this was insane, they have deployed 280,000 investigators to follow up on 13,000 tips over the course of the 20 years. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's an insane amount of number. And Brittany and Ashley also just kind of commented, like, you know, maybe there's too many cooks in the kitchen with, like, 280,000 investigators. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, they're all going to be going off in different directions.
Exactly. Narrow it down. Yeah, so they were like, you know, maybe there's just needs to be a main point person or, you know, I don't know. Maybe they just do things differently over there. But, yeah, so it's still unsolved. They've never had any, like, a prime suspect, nothing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess if this guy, a hitman, was hired, like, how did the person who hired the hitman think they were going to get this family's money? Like, if that's how it was, like, going to go down, like, how did they not think that it wouldn't blow up into like a crime
investigation? Yeah, I don't know. And maybe that's why I can kind of believe the fact of the stuff that was left was all to be like a distraction. Yeah. And, you know, if it's someone not from there, like someone from South Korea and they're not from Tokyo, like maybe they're, you know, maybe they know they're not in the system or the database and their DNA is not going to be a hit. But yeah, I mean, they left all sorts of things that could throw you off track, but their DNA and fingerprints and blood was all there. You know, like, well, I guess you get the DNA from the blood, but anyways, or the DNA from, I don't know.
Was this a house or an apartment?
A house.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is the Setagaya family murders, and it is just so strange to me that a whole family is wiped out.
Yeah, and the crime scene is so weird.
Yeah. Very weird. But, yep, that's on Crime Junkies, and it is a very, very interesting and sad, obviously, but it is one of those cases that you just cannot wrap your head around. So, hopefully, the mom is still alive. She's, like, 80-something, and obviously she really wants to find out who did this to the family. Yeah. But, yep, it's still cold. Still cold case, but that is Setagaya family murders.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. And mine is Dellen Millard. It's, I was going to say a number, but it's not numbered. It was released by Crime Junkies in December 2019. But when I was looking it up, there's a show called Canadian True Crime. Oh, and okay. It has like many episodes. And I think the host, I think she's actually Australian, but maybe she lives in Canada now. I don't know. And there's a 6-part series on this crime.
Oh.
So if you want like a deeper dive into it, I started to listen to it and I just didn't get that far. Not because it was bad. I just was
And you already know the story.
Yeah, I was trying to like condense it.
Yeah.
For this. So this happened in 2013 and it takes place in Hamilton, Ontario in Canada. And it starts with Tim Bozma and his wife, Charlene, are at home and they're waiting for, they had someone who was coming by to look at their truck. They were trying to sell their truck. They were a young family and they needed some cash. So I don't know where they like listed it, but they had someone say that they were interested and they were going to come by and test drive it. So they originally were supposed to come by at like 7 o'clock and it was like 9 o'clock at this point at night. And so they were like wondering if the people were ever going to show up. And they got, I think they got like a text or a call and said like, we're going to be late, but we're going to be there. So two men show up on foot to see this car. And Tim and Charlene live like kind of in the middle of nowhere, like it's not easily accessible on foot, but they like Ashley and Britt are like, well, they are coming to look at a car, so maybe they don't have one, so that's why they're walking on foot.
That is so weird. Like I would have gotten red flags immediately if I saw somebody walking on foot.
Yes. And so Tim said to his wife, like, should I go with them or should I just give them the keys? And Charlene's like, of course you go with them. If you just give them the keys, they're just going to take off in their car.
Take the car,
like,
yeah.
You want the car to come back. Yes, go with them. So he's like, okay, I'll be right back. So Tim leaves with the two men for the test drive. Charlene waits for him for over an hour. And she's like, this is not right. It's supposed to be a quick test drive. And Tim hasn't returned. So she tried calling his phone and he had charged up his phone while they were waiting and his phone goes straight to voicemail, which doesn't make sense for her. So she reports him missing. So the police have like a good way to track Tim because he left in this car. So they start looking first for his truck. They find the truck. And it has, the truck has Tim's phone in it. And so once they get a hold of the phone, they start like looking through the numbers and like who he's last contacted. And so they find the number of the potential buyer and they see like the conversation back and forth of the two men who came to look at the truck. And, but the name that it's registered in, I can't remember the name, but it doesn't matter because it's a fake name. It's like traced back to like a kid in high school that's like not even in that town, but the kid doesn't actually go to that school. Anyway,
it's just basically it's a burner like a phone. Fake profile. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fake name. It's a burner phone. So that even though they have the car and the truck, they don't have Tim and they don't have the men who came to look at the truck. So their next lead comes from a man named Igor. He owned the same truck that Tim did, and he called the police to say that he had the same experience. He had two men show up on foot, try to look at his truck. He didn't go with them on the test drive. They drove it, came back, and left. And Britt and Ashley are like, okay, well, what makes him different from Tim? Like, why did they take Tim? And I guess Igor was like a really big guy, and the two men that showed up were not that big. They were just average size. And so they were like, they wouldn't have been able to overtake Igor. Yeah. So he wasn't like their victim. But Igor can give the police like pretty good descriptions of the two men. And the one had a tattoo on his arm, said like ambition, I think.
Okay.
So they have some pretty like good identifying features of the men who came. So using the descriptions, the police find and arrest Dellon Millard. And Dellon was 27 years old. He was an heir to a multi-million aviation company. So like, his MO like makes no sense. Like, he could go and buy a truck like with cash. Like, he could buy 100 trucks in cash.
Yeah.
So like, a robbery doesn't make any sense. But when they bring Dellon in, he had Tim's keys on him. And so they take the keys, they find Tim's truck at Dellon's mom's house. So they go into the house and they find blood, or no, not inside the house. First, they go inside the truck and they find blood evidence in the truck and sign of a cleanup. So, I don't think he was a neighbor, but I think he had done like, they had not like a farm, but they had like a lot of land. Dellon's mom did. And so someone who I think had worked on the land, went to police and said that he noticed some like weird stuff on their property. And he's like, I don't know that it's like creepy weird, but it's just like odd. I don't really get it. They had like a really big excavator, and they had a really big smoker. Huh. And this smoker was like 6 feet long and 10 feet tall, or the other way around, 6 feet tall and 10 feet long, which like an average person, like even if you like barbecue, like a whole like pig, you don't need like 6 foot by 10 foot.
Yeah.
And it had a 100-pound propane tank attached to it. And so, I mean, it was human size. Like, you could fit a body in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dellon had named this smoker the Eliminator, and he like put the letters on the outside of it, like labeling it the Eliminator. And so the police search inside, and inside of the smoker, there's tooth and bone fragments and like DNA, or not DNA, but the forensics can tell that it's human.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with all this, they put it all together, and they figure out that Dellon was like killing and smoking, like burning bodies. And he had an accomplice. His name was Mark Smitch. And Mark was kind of like Dellon was like the mastermind of it all. And Mark would just kind of go along with it. And so once they kind of put all the pieces together of Tim's death, the police get like a call about a cold case. So a girl named Laura Babcock had been missing for, I can't remember how long, but the police got a call from Laura's parents, and Laura's ex-boyfriend, when she went missing, had seen the story of Dellon and Tim on the news, and he recognized Dellon as the guy that Laura had been texting like right before she went missing. So police are searching, like, all this time they're searching Tim's house, Mark's house, and they find in Mark's house Laura's iPad and a duffel bag like with her name on it. And so they like get text messages and calls and all this from Mark and Tim's phone, and they put together Laura's last night. And so Laura and Dellon were together, And all of a sudden, Laura's phone stops like pinging off of cell towers. And a few hours after her phone like stops pinging, Dellen takes a picture of like a rolled up tarp. And it's like, it looks like it's a log, but it looks like it's like 12 feet long and it's blue and it's like bundled up. And he puts a reminder in his phone that says barn smell check.
What?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, so like the police or nobody smells like decomposing body because the rolled up tarp was Laura's body.
So he like gave himself a reminder to like make sure that it wouldn't smell?
Yeah.
I have like reminder to give DC his flea medicine in my phone. Yeah.
And then he texts Mark, the barbecue is warmed up and ready for meat.
Gross.
And he has a screenshot of a Google search of what temperature is cremation. Does cremation happen at? So like how hot does it have to get to burn the body? And then Mark wrote a song. And I mean, it's awful. It talks about Laura and her death, but explains like her burning and stuff.
Ew.
So anyway, There's like no question to what happened to Laura and Tim, but there is a little bit of question to what happened to Dellen's dad, because before all this, his dad died and it was ruled a suicide at the time of his death. But after finding all of this out, the police like kind of reinvestigate his death. And Dellen had been telling everyone for months before he died that he was like depressed and suicidal. But when they open it back up, they realize like the ME medical examiner said that like he had never seen a suicide where the gunshot was like through the eye.
Huh, and that's interesting.
That was the case with Dellen's dad. And the gun that he quote unquote shot himself with, Dellen had just bought. It was Dellen's gun, and his fingerprints were on it.
Yeah.
So Dellen had been convicted of Tim's death and Laura's death, and they like overturned like the ruling of suicide and his dad's death. Mm-hmm. And he was also found guilty of his dad's
so
death
this guy
as well.
Just literally liked to kill. Like there was nothing. Like,
he didn't need money.
Uh-huh.
And like Laura, she had gotten into like sex work, I guess.
Okay.
And so he had met her during that time. And so he kind of dated her, knew her through that. But Tim, it was a complete stranger. He didn't know him at all.
Well, and usually there's some other motive. Like there's a robbery or there's like a sexual motive. There's like nothing.
Blue. He just enjoyed
killing
and killing.
He didn't do like it to one sex, you know. He didn't have like a type, men, women, his father.
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't matter who you were.
Yeah, and there was one comment that maybe he was upset because his dad had been threatening to cut him off because he was like financially supporting him, and Dellen was like kind of a ladies' man and lived very like fast and loose or whatever, and was like, I don't know, like not responsible. So Dellen's dad was maybe going to cut him off, but I mean, like get a job, dude. Like,
yeah. And I mean, I guess again, the dad kind of makes sense if that was the case. Mm-hmm. And maybe the girlfriend, I don't know, but Tim is just so random.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were like planning it too. Like it didn't work out with the first guy. So
they found a different guy with the same truck. And how you can get two people to be so like deranged and to think go along with the same thing. And I don't know. So the 6-part series, I think, goes into a little bit more of like who Tim was, who Laura was, which I think is important to like make it, you know, give them, you know, the voice of the story. But
make it less about Dellen.
It's crazy. Again, it's like, why would you do that? Like we know the criminal in this case, like not in yours, but it's still like, what is the motive?
Yeah, so I listened to that, I guess, when it came out. And then when you said you were doing that, I went to go listen to it again to, like, remember it. And as soon as I played it, I was like, oh my God, I remember this. And it's just those random acts are so, like, so much scarier to me. Because a lot of times when someone is killed, it's personal, you know? And I think to myself, like, okay, I don't have anyone out there.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen to me.
Yeah. And then when you get these random ones, you're like, wait, this
can happen to anyone.
It can happen. And this story also kind of reminded me, there was, I was actually looking it up on my phone when you were talking. So in New Orleans, and I know, like, this was so close to me because people I know from Louisiana were, like, sharing this on their Facebook, like, in real time. So there was this guy, Joseph Vindel, and he was 29 years old, so, like, basically our age. And he had sold a dirt bike to someone, like, on Facebook Marketplace, and he was missing. And so when he was missing, like, people were people I knew and went to college with were sharing his girlfriend's Facebook post. So, you know, I'm watching along with it, like, okay, has he been found? Like, what's going on? So they realize, I mean, they did the same thing. They knew he went to sell the dirt bike. So they go to his, like, messages, find out who he sold it to. And it was this 20-year-old kid. And he, I think, Joseph went and met him. They went and met somewhere. And the kid just, like, shoots him, kills him, puts him in the back of Joseph's car, takes the car, dumps it somewhere, gets the dirt bike out, and drives it back to his apartment. And they said, like, the dirt bike was
worth, like, a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, like $2,800. So they're like, you killed this innocent guy who was just trying to sell you a $2,800 dirt bike. Yeah. Like, for what? Like, why? And he's a 20-year-old kid, and you're like, you're 20 years old. Like, your life is now gone because of this stupid thing that you did. But that like, shows you that it's just so random, you know?
Yeah, at the, like, beginning of the episode, Ashley's like, it's a warning for any of you who's ever sold something online, which is so many of us. And
yeah, and a cool thing that they did in this parish in New Orleans, they at... I think it's police stations, they have reserved parking spots where you can do online transactions.
Like, right in front of the
police. Yeah, in honor of him. Mm-hmm. And so you can go and park and exchange your goods.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's just, it was so crazy. I mean, we hear these stories online and yes, they're crazy, but they seem so far away from us because, I mean, we don't know these people or anything, but when something like this happens, I didn't know this guy, but I knew a lot of people who did know him, and I saw it, like, happening in real time on Facebook, and you're just like, oh my God. And I've sold a ton of things on Facebook. I mean, I never like meet the person. I usually just, like, leave it out on my front porch, and then I'm like, I have my big scary dog will bark at you, and then you'll hopefully just get your stuff and leave. But yeah, it's a scary thing that I feel like people do all the time, all the time. And yeah, it's a sad thing that happens to people. And it always shocks me too, like, when it happens to a guy, because you think, like, guys can protect themselves, or, like, another guy wouldn't be stupid to do it to a, because they're going to be able to, like, stand up for themselves better than, you know, maybe a woman.
Guy's not typically a victim.
Yeah. Yeah. So it always just shocks me too when something like that happens to a guy, because then you're like, well, crap, like, we're really screwed if they're, you know, like, if things are happening like this. So so be careful out there. Don't, you know, be cautious, I guess, when you're selling things online.
Well, the other things that I was going to talk about, I did Heaven's Gate. I don't know how many episodes ago. But on March 11th, I think, there is a Dateline. No, 2020.
Okay.
2020. There's an episode, like, a special on Heaven's Gate.
Oh.
And they're, like, releasing never before seen like videos and images and like interviews with people who have the cult and stuff. And so I've only seen like the, you know, like
the preview.
Yeah. But if you liked that episode or just
want to know more,
want to know more about it, that's going to be on. And then the other thing, we only briefly touched on this, but with the, I think it was our serial killers episode, we talked about the Clove Hitch killer, which was based on kind of BTK. And there's a Netflix show called Catching Killers. Have you watched any of that?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, it's really good. And they, I think it's their second episode or second season, I mean, that they just released. And the first episode is the who caught the BTK killer.
Oh, okay.
And so there was some stuff like I didn't know about him. And it's, that show is so good because you are hearing it from the detectives who actually did the work and caught the people. And I think it was this episode, like, I mean, they're detectives, so they're like these burly guys and they look really tough. And like almost all of them are crying at the end of it of the relief and like the work and everything that they put into it. And this is like 20 years still. And when they retell the story, they still like are like tearing up.
Oh, it gives me like goosebumps.
Yeah, it does give you goosebumps. So that's a really good show. And then I started watching Station 11, which is not crime at all.
Oh, I don't know. I heard that. Like, what is that on?
It's on HBO Max.
Okay.
And it's like, it's based on a book, and the book was written in 2014, but it's about like the end of the world after a pandemic, which is weird that she wrote that in 2014 and then it happens.
Yes. So I forgot to tell you this. The Last Man on Earth, did we have this conversation? I don't think
I think you mentioned it, but we didn't talk about it.
So Last Man on Earth came out in like 2015 or 16. And I was in like college when I started watching it and I didn't finish it. It's like a silly show. And then recently I was like, I need something to watch and I want something funny, stupid, like just lighthearted. I don't consume all deep, dark things. So I picked it up and started and finished it. Well, they, I don't know if you know like the premise, but basically everyone dies and there's like a few people left and it's like their story of, it's a comedy. So it's their story of like finding each other and just trying to live in this world where there's no one there. And they have like famous people like Kristen Wiig, January Jones is in it. There's a lot, what's his name? He's Ted Lasso in, he's Ted Lasso and Ted. Or wait, no, he's Ted Lasso and Ted Lasso. Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah.
See, he's in it. So like there's all these great people. But what happens is there's a pandemic that like takes everybody out and they're all like wiping their hands with sanitizer and they have like bubble suits on with like masks. Like it literally is like what happened in 2020, but this was written and produced like prior to that and ended, I think, before that. And so it's just, I was watching that and I was like, this is creeping me out like big time, because he literally like predict, I mean, other than like everybody being wiped out, but it literally predicted like how people were going to react and, you know, like the stores being empty of everything and everybody.
That's what happens in Station 11.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
It's like, so there's like a theater troupe that kind of is the people who survive it. But like also in the beginning, it kind of starts in a theater and a man who's watching this play gets a call from his sister and she's a nurse and she's like, you have to go home and like barricade yourself in, like this flu is like attacking everyone. And she was like, you have to stay as far away, whatever. And he ends up like walking this little girl home who he doesn't know, and she ends up staying with him because of things.
Yeah.
And he like goes to the grocery store and he buys like three carts full of food, and like the checkout guy is like, is this because of, you know, the flu or what's happening? And they're like, they're wearing the same masks that we had to be wearing. And it's like, how did you write this? But it's like a very like beautiful story in the end. But if you're like sensitive to that, you're like, I don't really want to watch that. Mm-hmm. I get it. But there were like pieces of the story that I didn't like fully understand because it's kind of like a magical.
Oh, okay.
Sort of. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was good.
I've been watching, I was telling you, Pieces of Her. I literally just started that. So I'm on like the second episode and I really like it so far. So you need to check it out. But I have a feeling it will be one of our shows that we talk about. So here's your heads up if you want to watch it. But yeah, I'm glad to find like another good show to watch because I was struggling. Like yesterday, I was going to watch season 4 of Handmaid's Tale. Did you ever watch that?
I watched a few episodes of the first season. I just didn't really get into it.
Yeah, it's hard to watch and it's really dark and just it's a lot. Yeah. And so I tried to watch season 4, but I just can't get into it. I just don't think, I don't know. I think I've done the 3 seasons and I just don't know if I have it in me to finish it off, but maybe somebody will tell me differently. And then I almost started Worst Roommate Ever on Netflix.
Oh, I've seen that.
Okay. Yeah. You saw the like thing. Yeah. And I didn't get that far into that, but now that Pieces of Her, that's like right up my alley. I'm into that.
Did you ever watch Money Heist?
No, my parents did. Okay. So I would like, I remember sitting around watching that with them a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was like, because I kind of saw bits and pieces of it with them. I'm like now like,
not, there's no point.
Yeah. So, but anyways, that's all I got. I know we haven't recorded, I guess, in like 2 weeks. So we had a lot to catch up on and we like totally just didn't put out an episode last Monday. So whoopsies. But hey, you know, when you, you've got a small following,
you'll be even more excited. Yeah. For the one
we'll definitely have one tomorrow. But anyways, that's I think all I got. You got anything else?
No.
Okay, bye Sam.
Bye Ashton.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.